2018 was a big year for architect Balkrishna Doshi. In March, at the age of 90, he became the first Indian to win his profession's highest honor, the Pritzker Prize. Doshi has been called the father of sustainable architecture in India. He's known for work that combines traditional Indian design and modernist principles, an approach he has applied in projects as diverse as an underground art gallery and a low-income housing complex the size of a small city. I spoke with Balkrishna Doshi via Skype shortly after he won the Pritzker, and I started by asking how winning felt.
Well, absolutely touching, very emotional. And I am not only surprised, but I am grateful.
Well, tell us a little bit about your work. The Pritzker Committee said you've always created an architecture that is serious, never flashy, or a follower of trends.
I think the kind of architecture that I do is connected to my own place, the ground. So it has to be rooted, because in the changing and constantly uncertain circumstances, there is no other way but to find connections between small and big and diverse situations. The sun is very hot in certain times. Monsoon comes, you know, and flooding rushes. Then winter is reasonable. Then there are hot winds. But otherwise, if you close the house, it is stuffy. So what one tries to do is almost like clothing. You know, you try to create ways and means of creating projections, openings, enclosures, cross ventilation, so that you really feel always that you would like to be inside rather than outside.
So how much for you is about utility versus the beauty of the place?
No, I would give them equal, because I think if utility is not there, you are not comfortable. And then if you see the beauty, you would notice. But if you see the beauty, but then suddenly the comfort is not there, then I think your attention to that beauty would reduce. So I think you have to have equal balance as much as possible.
I was reading an interview that you did, and you said that the perfect architecture will allow you to really explore your own thoughts in a way that you wouldn't otherwise.
Yes. Actually, what happens is that, you know, if you were a child, when I was a child, I was wandering anywhere, you go, your sense of freedom, and suddenly you discover something which you had not discovered before. And I think the most important thing is that our subtle nuances in our sensitivities, if we cannot really relate them to the outside or allow them to connect with the unknown, the unexperienced, I think new thoughts don't come, because surprise is one of the very important elements for creativity.
And where did you first experience that?
I first experienced in my grandfather's house, climbing up and down those dark, semi-dark staircases. And then suddenly you come to a courtyard, and then you go to the terrace and you see a very little plant. And you feel the differences between all these. And then it is quite silent, you know, compared to the street, you know, on which the house is. So you do get this contrast, you know, when there's hot, you sit, you know, in there and you look at the moonlight. The skies are very beautiful in India. And I think we used to sleep on the terrace. And I think it was very pleasant, cooler, because the wind was blowing. And in a few minutes or maybe 20 minutes, you know, the whole place becomes cool. And you feel so happy and relaxed. I think those experiences I try to remember. And then I go back to see buildings in India, the old buildings or palaces and others. And I discovered that they had imbibed these things in their work. They had manipulated the way surprises would happen. If there is a hard sun, how do you get reflected light? If there was a breeze, how do you catch the breeze? Do you find some scoops in the roof and then the breeze would come down instead of a fan which is hung on the ceiling? Given the situation, how does one highlight or discover and create a situation by which you get what you want without thinking that you will get it? And I think that's the surprise.
You worked with the famous modernist architects Louis Kahn and Le Corbusier, whom you called the guru. How did they influence your work?
Well, they talked to me about life. We never discussed architecture, either with Corbusier or Kahn. Corbusier, you know, I was younger, much younger. And he was showing me how people move, how people behave, how birds and animals go through the house, how shadows happen, what does the sun do. Then he would look at the miniature paintings and look at how our ancient traditions are, where there are beautiful terraces and balconies and jharukhas. And Khan, on the other hand, talked to me about the shadow, but he talked about the ethereal quality. You know, he would talk about the sun, which hits the wall of the brick, and the brick gets highlighted because the brick is not, it is almost semi-handmade, and you could get the textures of the brick. And they both became, for me, gurus in different ways. Khan admired Corbusier because of the ability to dream and explore and do the unexpected. But for me, Khan also gave me the idea of the immaterial, you know, what was inherent in me in India, which I was not aware. I became aware because Khan talked about the spirit of the unknown and what that spirit means. You know, he would say, what would the building like to be? What does the brick want to say? And I think all those things combined together is what I am trying to do and then discover myself. Techniques that I find here, like in South India, the columns are not the same. Each column is different, and though they have the same geometric order of structure, and suddenly one realizes the columns also are alive because the statue or the sculpture or the figure starts talking to you. So how can the inert matter becomes alive? And I think they did not think, you know, that you need column has to be only pure and round or whatnot. But here, the columns were exaggerated, you know, by their expressive attitude of almost as if they were living being. And I think these are the kind of elements I learned from India.
You mentioned columns, by the way. There's a project that you did in Ahmedabad, an underground art gallery, and many of us were looking at pictures of it and noticed that it reminded us of Gaudi. Was that where you got that idea, or was it completely separate?
No. It was actually an accident. I was doing this in ferrocement building, and before I was doing ferrocement building, I had thought of putting columns in certain places, which I had done. And I had taken a hollow hume pipe, cement pipe, and I had located them there. And when I decided to use ferrocement, the junctions which came between the walls or the curvature that happened, I think they and the column below did not work now. So what I had to do was find a way. So I found a bamboo stick and I created the gravity, force of gravity, and created those. And then the column was somewhere else, and I tried to match that with the curvature, which is little away. So they are actually not functional in a sense, but they are combining now what was before, what is new, and what can be done so something else would come. So even for me, it has been a great surprise.
You also mentioned scale, and I want to ask you about another one of your projects, the Aranya low-cost housing, which is home to 60,000 people. Did you have any feelings of overcrowding while you were putting together something like that?
You know, I also get surprised when I still recollect that there are 60,000 people. But when you start with a blank plate or earth, and then you start doing plinth, when you do plinths, you know, of 50, 100, etc., you don't realize what you are doing. And slowly, these people come and settle there as if they are settling on a slightly raised platform with a little tap and a toilet there. So when that happened, their scales were extremely narrow. If I had taken the municipal bylaws, I would have never done these buildings. But because they had doing their own buildings and nobody was controlling them, they found minimum ways of using maximized utility of spaces. And that's how the scale changed. So today, 60,000 people, you don't notice them because the houses are small houses, like towns. So it's very human. You don't feel overcrowded. And I think that is what I learned again, that if you want to do things, break them into small components. So it was not a combination of one building. It is like having many, many small buildings. Actually, they're all small segments, or like a honeycomb. A small segments put together, then it becomes a big thing.
What's your favorite building that is not one of yours, but anywhere in the world, something that you are inspired by?
I think Fatehpur Sikri, to me, still fascinates me, and the South Indian temple. Fatehpur Sikri because it is on one single unit, columns, you know, one material, one simple pattern, and almost like a prefab, you know, you get stone slabs and columns, and it grows so beautifully that you always go there, and there is no tree incidentally there in that whole campus. But what a beautiful place, because there are a lot of places of shade, and then lot of variations when you move there, because you are meandering, you are all the time going with the shadow and light, and you are always wanting to be in the shadow, but you have to shift, because the plan is shifting, the building shifts. Then you look at Indian sculptures, Indian paintings, and the way India tries to do traditionally the fulfillment of everything. And I think this is what I learned.
That's Balkrishna Doshi, who is the winner of this year's Pritzker Prize for Architecture, joining us from India on Skype. Balkrishna Doshi, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you today.
No, thank you, Mr. Hobson. Thanks a lot for all this. Thank you.
I spoke with Balkrishna Doshi in March. You can see some of his work at hereandnow.org.